Today's program is brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Greetings and welcome to Animal Instinct here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Celia Kutcher. I'm also known as the Food Healer, and I am totally excited about today's interview. I'm speaking with Luis Sahoyos, Academy Award-winning director, about his new project, Racing Extinction, which is airing on Discovery December the 2nd. Luis, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk to me. For starters, I'm a huge fan of all your projects, and I'm so excited that you're on the line, I can't even tell you. So thank you so much for taking some time to talk to me today. How are you?
Hello. Yeah.
How are you today?
Good. Just been doing a massive amount of traveling, promoting the film. So I was in Bogota yesterday morning, L.A. last night.
Wow.
New York this morning, and so it's been quite a whirlwind tour, but it's all good.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. And I'm sure myself and you and everybody involved in the film and everyone that's heard about it is really, really excited to see this. How did you get involved with Racing Extinction?
I'm sorry, what's the question?
How did you get involved with Racing Extinction?
Well, you know, I was at Sundance with the first movie I did, The Cove, and I took two books with me, one by Michael Novacek, I dug up dinosaurs in the Gobi Desert with him. I did four stories on the Mesozoic, the midlife of the planet for National Geographic. And this book that Michael had just written, he's talking about how we're losing species, animal species, faster than mankind's ability to record that they're even on the planet with us. And I thought, that's crazy. That's insane. It's depressing. So I picked up another book by Charles Roan, the former chief marine scientist for Australia, and it was called A Reef in Time, about the Great Barrier Reef. Mm. And in the book, he was talking about how we're losing not just the barrier reef, but all reefs because of acidification, and that's a precursor to a mass extinction event.
Wow.
And I thought, this is the biggest story in the world. And I didn't know about it. I wrote a book about paleontologists and extinction. And that was my introduction to what's called the Anthropocene, this new epoch where scientists say we may be losing half the species on the planet by the end of the century. Right then I decided that I needed to do a movie about it, and that was about 6 years ago. And, it's coming on Discovery on December 2nd, and it's going to have this global premiere that's going to be in 220 countries on a single day.
Wow.
220 countries and territories.
Wow.
So it's going to be one of the widest releases of a documentary in history. And, we're real excited about it because it's going to, you know, hopefully create some awareness and, more importantly, some action around it so we can help prevent this catastrophe.
Definitely. And it's, when you were working on this film, did it take you 6 years to film to make this thing happen, or was it less time than that?
No, 6 years. the Cove took 5 years. I mean, it seems to be about standard for me is about 5 years for a project. I'd love to be able to speed it up, but yeah, it takes a lot of time to organize a film, even though it's just 90 minutes. But you know, when you're doing a documentary, it's not scripted, so you're sort of making it up as you go along, trying to figure out, you know, what the story is and what creatures to follow and what characters to follow. And you know, a normal Hollywood film has about 58 hours average of filming. We probably had 2,000.
Wow.
So it's a lot of material to siphon through to, you know, figure out how, because you could go a million different directions of the story. But, you know, we had the same team back that did The Cove and, you know, the film. I'm very happy with it because it's been playing really well around the world. Just pretty much standing ovations wherever you go. So people seem to like it.
And it's something that I keep hearing about, like people have seen it and then they'll see it again, or they've just heard about it now, or they heard about it when it first came out. Like, it's got legs. It just keeps going, which is fantastic.
Yeah, we keep on, you know, we've been honing it as we've been on the festival circuit for almost the last year and a half. We've been, you know, changing it and evolving it. In fact, we did these massive projections on the Empire State Building just about a month and a half before we came out in theatrical. And after it comes out in Discovery on December 2nd, we'll probably modify it again because we're doing some really big projections on a famous European building I can't talk about. But it'll,
oh, cool.
They say that you're never really finished with a documentary. You abandon it. And I haven't quite abandoned, the making of it yet. There's still one more piece I want to put into the puzzle. But, the premiere, the film's, it's been playing very well, like I said, around festivals.
Good, good. And so, creating, as you were saying, that making a documentary is completely different than a feature film because you're really kind of figuring out where you're going while you're filming. What was it like to direct this film?
The director, John Ford, probably said it best. He said, making a movie is like painting a picture with an army. It's more like making a movie with a SWAT team. I've got, this wonderful band of, advocates and, activists that are really trying to change the world, trying to fix things. And, this next film, it's a little bit like The Avengers, but it's real.
Yeah.
We have, the real-life Iron Man in our movie, Elon Musk, the guy that was, runs Tesla, mm-hmm. SpaceX, and Solar City. He's one of our characters in the movie. I was just with him last night. We showed the movie in L.A. for one of these sort of, they call them tastemaker screenings. And a real inspirational character, because a lot of the solutions to this mass extinction are, we can think our way out of quite a few of them.
Yeah.
And he's, one thing is to get off of internal combustion engines. There really should be a thing of the past. Burning fossil fuels to get around town in the car is pretty primitive.
Mm.
We have a Tesla that we modified into kind of a Bond car for the film. And Leilani Munter, who's a NASCAR driver, she's, 5 foot nothing, but she's like this force of nature. She uses her car to, with environmental messages and animal rights messages on the side. She's
nice.
A Blackfish car, a Cove car, it's all about solar. And so she's, in a male dominated sport. And this, but we drove the Tesla off the lot. This is about a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she turned to me and said, every other car on the road just became a relic.
Wow.
Because it's fast, it's interesting. We charge our cars up, our electric cars up with solar power.
Wow.
We make our movies on solar and wind.
Wow.
So it's pretty exciting. Yeah, we do some cool stuff. The cars are fun to drive. I'm not much of a car guy, really.
Uh-huh.
I think we probably have one of the coolest cars in the world now, with this modified Tesla, but. The car is fun to drive. It's clean. It's the solutions to a lot of the problems that we're facing are really upgrades.
Mm.
One of the biggest problems, the biggest causes of this mass extinction is the raising of food. Raising of food that we're going to feed animals that we're in turn going to eat.
Yeah.
So it's if people adopted more of a plant based diet, we could be a long ways toward solving this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because the raising of animals for human consumption creates more greenhouse gases than all the emissions from the entire transportation sector. If somebody wants to save the planet, change the world, change your diet.
Yeah. That's an incredible statistic when you think about it, really, because it's like you see all these photographs or this film, like whenever they're showing, global warming or problems with the planets, they show like, Beijing with the smog and like New York from the 70s where it's just filthy or L.A. on a bad day. And so it's always, you just assume it's traffic and man-made industry that's doing this. And then when it's actually, creating our food is a huge problem. It makes you really think differently about it.
Yeah. One thing we did with this in the film is we have adapted a camera. It's called a FLIR camera, forward-looking infrared camera. And it has a special filter on it, so you can actually see greenhouse gases.
Oh, wow.
It's Yeah, so it's like you can see, like right now I'm talking, you can see the carbon dioxide coming out of my mouth. You can see it coming out of tailpipes, out of smokestacks, out of, weed whackers and,
wow.
You know, lawnmowers and, you know, buses and cars. It's pretty dramatic.
Wow.
So we drove around, pretty much drove around the country with these two cameras. One of them comes out of the front of a Tesla. We have it's on a robotic arm.
So oh,
we
cool.
A camera. We can aim it anywhere we want. And then out of the back, we have a 16,000 lumen projector on a robotic arm.
Wow.
So we can project these images the size of a skyscraper. So, and the car, has a couple of the cool features. It has like the luminescent paint job, the first car in the world where you can actually change the color of the car with a flick of a button. You know, we use it for sort of a reverse camouflage, because when we're doing these sort of sniper projections, we're able to, the car looks like, it's lit up. It looks very dramatic. Then we turn it off. It goes into stealth mode, and we can.
Nice.
Yeah. You know, it's like I said, it's like a Bond film.
It's a Bond film, but it's your life right now, so it's even cooler.
Yeah, exactly.
So I have a question for you for the naysayers, because this is something that I've heard a lot doing this show just from people that listen and things like that, is basically they're like, there's a lot of species of animals, so what's the big deal if we lose like one or two?
One or two, about one out of a million species should go extinct every year just based on, the general coming and going.
Mm-hmm.
But we're losing species now 1,000 times faster than the background rate, 1,000 times faster than we should be. And this is all human caused.
Yeah.
There's four major drivers of extinction. Like I said before, the big one is habitat destruction. Then there's pollution, invasive species, and overconsumption. So in the, when you're talking about sharks, they're really getting hit by all four.
Right.
And so there's a lot of these insults. I mean, the burning of fossil fuels, it doesn't just go into the atmosphere. About a third to half of it gets absorbed by the ocean. It creates carbonic acid.
Mm.
And carbonic acid dissolves anything with a carbon shell, like a like shellfish or
wow.
coral reefs. And when you start to lose the coral reefs, all coral reefs are going to be in a state of dissolve by 2050 at the current rate of acidification.
Oh, my
God. And by 2100, they'll be gone. When you lose the coral reefs, you lose about 25% of the species in the ocean. Of course, the coral reefs are, home to the population of all these creatures. But there are also, there's a billion people that rely on coral reefs for food and sustenance.
Wow.
So when you lose it, then, where are those people going to go for food?
Yeah.
So it's not just losing one or two species. We're trying in this film, hopefully people learn that we're all connected. It's to the smallest thing on the planet, plankton, which is in the ocean, directly affects your life.
Yeah.
Two out of every three breaths you take, you owe to plankton. Plankton generates far more oxygen than all the land plants in the world. And we're losing it, some scientists say, at the rate of about 1% a year.
Oh, my God.
So, and plankton's not just, source of oxygen. It's the base of the food chain. Without
wow.
plankton, you don't have blue whales. You don't have dolphins.
Yeah.
You don't have, tuna. So everything is interdependent. Human beings are not on the top of the food chain. We're part of the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
We're intricately, part of it. So, we don't even, as human beings, we don't even think of ourselves as animals. But we are. We're just a hairless ape.
Totally.
And we have this arrogance under it, why should these species matter to us? Well, because we're all connected.
Yeah. Yeah, and isn't that the truth? Wow. Well, we need to take a break, and I think this is the perfect time. So I am talking to Luis Sahoyas all about Racing Extinction. We'll be back in about a minute and a half to continue the conversation.
Hello out there, it's Steve Jenkins, I'm with Fairway Markets. White Leghorn, Red Wattle, Bourbon Red, Navajo Churro. Well, these aren't names you're likely to hear at a Fairway butcher counter or any other counter today, but before the rise of factory farming, you would have. And at Heritage Foods USA, you still do. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. You see, we believe the best way to help a family farmer is to buy from them. And Heritage Foods is honored to represent a network of family farmers and artisanal producers whose work presents an immeasurable gift to our food system and to biodiversity. The meat we celebrate, whether it's heritage turkey, Japanese steaks, Berkshire pork, or Navajo churro lamb chops, is the righteous kind from healthy animals of sound genetics that have been treated humanely and allowed to pursue their natural instincts. It's a simple fact. Animals raised according to this philosophy taste better. And as we like to say, you have to eat them to save them. Visit us at heritagefoodsusa.com for more information.
Hello, I'm Alice Marcus Creek.
And I'm Carmen DeVito.
And we're the ladies of We Dig Plants. And today we're asking you to dig deep into your pockets and help us grow this radio station and our podcast and everything that you know and love about us.
How do you do it? You go to the heritageradionetwork.org website. You will see a beating heart. It's on every page. And you can give a dollar, you can give $5, you can give whatever.
$500.
$5,000. Just click on the heart, donate, and help support the radio that you love.
And we are back. I am talking to Luis Ojeyes, director of an amazing new film that is coming out that'll be on Discovery December the 2nd called Racing Extinction. So I have so many questions for you. I'm just trying to pick the pick one here. I wanted to hear about the on your website for Racing Extinction. There's all kinds of amazing information. Can we talk a little bit about hashtag start with one thing?
Yeah, I mean, when you're talking about mass extinction, you know, people think, oh my God, that's too big of a problem. There's nothing I can do to solve that. And but the issue is that if we all start with just one thing, we can start to, you know, create this revolution that we need. And, you know, we're not trying to dictate on the, you know, the site what people should exactly do, but, you know, we're hoping that they find their one thing by going to the site and seeing what other people are doing and trying to find that, you know, taking a pledge. You know, at my organization, you know, OPS, the Oceanic Preservation Society, I mean, we don't allow animals to be eaten in the building. They can eat it outside with the smokers, but you can't bring it inside because we just make a stand that if we're going to, you know, be environmentalists, we can't be eating animals.
Yeah.
I've been driving electric cars since 2007.
Wow.
The license plate of, you know, because I charge it up with solar because we have, you know, we're 140% solar on top of our building, which means we get checks from the electric company even in December, the darkest month of the year.
That's amazing.
And the license plate on my car said VUS, to stand for Vehicle Using Sun. It's the opposite of an SUV.
Nice.
So all the solutions really are upgrades. You know, there's a lot of great stories within the context of the film where people see that, you know, there's a lot of people just doing one amazing thing. Sean Heinrichs, he's an environmentalist, a good friend of mine from Boulder, Colorado, ocean activist. Manta rays are being exterminated by the thousands every year in Indonesia. You know, they're, you know, headed towards extinction. Mm. And in the course of this film, you see that he got them almost single-handedly. You know, working with other people, I shouldn't say single-handedly, but he was really the driving force behind it, the inspiration to get manta rays on the red list for CITES. This is the Convention for International Trade of Endangered Species, and did that. And now Indonesia, which killed more mantas than any other country in the world, is now the largest sanctuary in the world.
Wow!
And he's just one person. So I mean, you see these people doing incredible things, and you know, it sort of takes away the sort of undercurrent where people say, "Well, there's nothing I can do." But the collective action of somebody doing one thing can have a great multiplying effect. You know, the average person eats about 10,400 animals in their lifetime.
Wow!
And all protein comes from plants.
Yeah.
So you're just mugging the animal to get its protein. You go straight to the source. If you start eating more plants, A lot of them are loaded with proteins. In fact, a lot of the top athletes in the world right now are vegan.
Yep.
World's strongest guy, Patrick Baboumian, carried more weight than any other human has ever carried in history, is a vegan. You know, 9-time world champion arm wrestler, vegan. The Scott Jurek, most accomplished ultra runner in the world, just ran the Appalachian Trail, 2,200 miles, 46 days of double marathons a day vegan diet.
Oh, my God.
So, I mean, we're trying to dispel this myth that to be a man, you need to eat animals. So
yeah.
That's certainly one of the solutions. You know, a vegan driving a Hummer uses less energy than a meat eater on a bicycle.
Really?
So, you know, if you want to, like I said, if you want to change the world, change your diet.
Wow. Wow, that's such a great statistic. That's fantastic. But it's also staggering as well, you know? So that was the thing I wanted to ask you as well, because, I mean, I know that you started off diving and then doing photography for National Geographic and obviously spending a lot of time in the oceans and then creating this organization that you did. So I know that, I mean, from me and the minimal amount of diving and snorkeling that I've done, I've seen a huge difference in the past 30 years of what's underwater when you go down. I mean, for you, I'm assuming that you've seen like massive changes in the reefs and the fish populations and things like that. So how has that been for you? Is this just, what is that like?
Well, I mean, it's just called shifting baseline, where, you know, each generation adapts to this diminishment. You know,
yeah.
The reefs that, let's say, a diver saw in, 50 years ago. Well, I was just in Monaco with some of the Cousteaus and one of their grandfather, when Jacques Cousteau said that, in his lifetime, when he was a kid, he could look off the docks of Monaco and see coral reefs and fish. And
wow.
It was a coral haven. Now it's just a gray wasteland.
Yeah.
That happened 30 years ago. Now it's lifeless. I was just on the docks of Monaco, and it's dead out there.
Ugh.
So it's, there's about 800, what they call these dead zones around the oceans right now, and
mm-hmm.
they're expanding, and it's getting to be more of them. And, the facts are we just can't be all surviving an animal diet.
Yeah.
The human race can't be supported, 7.5 billion people, soon to be 9 billion people, with wildlife and have natural habitat. We're basically, eating our way out of, through the planet.
Yeah.
We were eating, big fish, and we get smaller and smaller. Now we're basically eating bait fish.
Totally.
And, although it's healthier to eat lower on the food chain, it's not sustainable what we're doing right
mm-hmm.
now.
And I don't think that we're advanced enough as a universal culture to like leap on the bug bandwagon that people are trying for. Like the countries that already eat insects and stuff, it's no big deal for them. But to come like to here, for example, and be like, hey, deep fried scorpions are tasty. I mean, this is going to fly like a lead balloon, needless to say.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, eating a plant-based diet, you don't have to go vegan or vegetarian overnight, but let's say just, like Meatless Mondays, just everybody could, one day out of the week,
yep.
just adjust their diet. If everybody in America just stopped eating, meat and eggs and cheese for one day out of the week, it'd be the equivalent of taking 7.6 million cars off the road for the entire year.
My God. Wow. Well, that says a lot, doesn't it? My God.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like you just keep leaving me like speechless. I'm floored by these statistics. So I'm torn between asking you what your most challenging moment was working on this film and what your favorite moment was working on this film.
We do a lot of undercover investigations where we're busting rings, selling endangered species. That was probably some of the most challenging. But, we lit up the Empire State Building on August 1st with endangered species. I've been trying for 4 years to do that.
But,
to draw worldwide attention to it. And when we did it, I remember our distributor, said, "Oh, the film's good enough. You don't need to do it." The producer was saying, "Nobody's going to be in New York on in August. Mm-hmm. Everybody's in the Hamptons or they're off in Europe. And the media on a Saturday night, nobody can afford to keep people, journalists there, so nobody's going to show up. We had 939 million media impressions the first week. We were the top trending story on Facebook and Twitter for 4 days running worldwide.
Yay!
So that was an exciting point in the film where, you know, just felt, you know, we stopped Fifth Avenue. You know, people, literally, there was taxis with fares in the back, and they were stopping to look at what was going on. It was, you know, we created one of those moments that, you know, I think anybody that was in New York that night and saw it will remember the rest of their lives. It was just, you know, people were just huge smiles on faces. It looks like, you know, it's like in New York when there's a snowstorm and everybody stops and they sort of hug each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, they look at the world, they become more humane.
Totally.
That's what it was like. You know, you saw couples holding each other and hugging each other.
Mm.
And, you know, families sitting on cars. It was just, it was delightful. It was just beautiful to give these animals a voice.
I tried to make it into the city, but I saw it off my roof and from Brooklyn. And let me tell you, man, it was really cool. I was ear to ear. It was like, yeah, we can see it out here in Brooklyn, baby. This is good. So, I mean, it was awesome, and it gave me goosebumps. And honestly, it's what made me. I was like, I've got to get this interview. Like, I have to get this interview. This is so important to me. And lately, I've been doing a lot of talk on like individual species or individual animals. And what keeps coming back over and over and over is the diminishing numbers. I mean, everything from like salamanders to, you know, name it, basically. And it's, you know, there used to be hundreds here when I was a kid, and now we're lucky to see five. And this topic is so important and also so scary that I really admire you guys for having the guts to come forward and do this. Because, you know, it's with people, like really, really, really heavy stuff can be so taboo that it's just this fear of knowledge, you know? And you guys went out there, and I mean, the preview, needless to say, is all I've seen, but oh my God, it's so cool. And it's such a, I like the urgency and I like all the energy in it because it really shows how important this is and that this is an issue that we have to do something. We can't just sit back and go, oh wow, this stinks. What are we going to do, you know?
Yeah, no, my friends in paleontology who, you know, study, you know, life on the planet going back, you know, billions of years say that, you know, when we look at the human experience, let's say the last 300 years from the Industrial Revolution to the year 2100,
mm-hmm.
you know, World War II is going to be a footnote in comparison to our generation possibly presiding over the biggest loss of species since a comet hit the planet 65 million years ago.
My God.
But like I said, the solutions are all upgrades.
Yeah.
You know, just by doing simple things, taking bold actions, we can, you know, working together, we can solve this issue.
And I think that what you guys have is, I mean, you know, I haven't seen this yet, but I'm so excited for you. And I'm like, the film's amazing just because I saw the preview. I'm assuming the film's going to be amazing. I'm assuming it's going to be as powerful as The Cove, which a friend of mine, when she heard about this interview, completely freaked out and wanted me to personally thank you from her for all the hard work you did and all the danger that you and your crew put yourselves into to film that film. So I'd like to extend that to thank you for all the hard work that you guys have put into this film and all the risks you've taken and everything else to show us what we need to do in order to make huge improvements and save this planet. I mean, this is serious stuff, you know?
Well, thank you. I mean, that's not just me. I'm just the director. We have 1,200 people in the credits, all of them very, very dedicated, all of them brilliant. And if anyone didn't do a brilliant job, it would have showed. And you know, we just have a really great team that put this all together. And it's not just me, but you're welcome. on behalf of them, you're welcome.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. So I want to get all this information out to everybody. So where can we find you guys? Where can we find out the information of the airing and all that stuff?
Yeah, well, it'll be on Discovery Channel December 2nd, 9 o'clock.
Perfect.
And then if they want to go to the site and figure out what some of the solutions are, try to find your one thing, go to racingextinction.com.
Perfect. So I am going to be looking forward to this film. Like I said, Louis, thank you so much. I know you're the busiest man in the world right now, so thank you so much for taking time to speak with us. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Nice talking to you.
Likewise. And I'll be watching. I'm going to force everybody to watch with me, so we'll be thinking of you on the second.
All right. Good night now.
Good night. Take care. And for everyone else, thank you so much for listening. I wanted to let you guys know that I now have an Instagram page for Animal Instinct. So if you go to Instagram, you can go to Animal Instinct Radio. That's me. Follow me for good stuff. And if you want to hear past episodes, please go to iTunes or Stitcher, and you can subscribe and get them all for free. Thanks again. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.
For listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.